Barak wasallam. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullah. So we're looking at hadith number 9 from the 40 hadith collection. We've been looking at it for some weeks now. We talked about the companion who narrates the hadith, Abu Huraira radiallahu anhu. We talked about the different parts of the hadith in terms of what I have forbidden for you, avoid what I've commanded, do to the best of your ability. Today we're going to talk about the latter part of the hadith. Can somebody read the English, the Arabic? You don't have to read both, but if you can read both, but one or the other. Yeah, go for it.
What I have forbidden for you, avoid. What I have ordered you to do, do as much of it as you can. For verily, it was only their excessive questioning and disagreeing that their prophets had destroyed the nations who were before you.
Great. Can someone read the Arabic? Did you raise your hand? Is that what you're doing, Simon?
No, I was volunteering.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't have the hadith. Yeah. I'm Abi Huraira Abd al-Rahman bin Sa'd radiallahu anhu. سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول ما نهيتهم عنه ما
Somebody else want to? Yeah, go ahead.
عن أبي حريرة عبد الرحمن بن صخر قال سمعت رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم يقول ما نهيتكم عنه فاجتنبوه وما أمرتكم به فأتوا منه ما استطعتم فإنما أهلك الذين من قبلكم كثرة مسائلهم
واختلافهم على أنبيائهم. So one of the things that I asked people to do 2 weeks ago, and only one person did it, and I said last week, let's try to do for this week, was read this article by Sheikh Abdul Hakim Murad. It's called The Sunnah as Primordiality. Did anybody read it? You read it? Did you read it? Again, you read it? You had read it the first time, right?
Down the rabbit hole of Imam
Abdul Hakim
Murad, and now there's a lot of content.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff, right?
It's really good.
Yeah, he's so great, mashallah. Who else read it? You guys read it? Great. So let's try to get everyone to read it. What was some of the crux of what Sheikh Abdul Hakim Murad is talking about in this article for those who read it, and how it relates to this hadith where we're talking about the Prophet alayhi salam, some of the things we were discussing before about essentially how this hadith is also telling its listener to kind of follow the teachings of the Prophet, right? So why was that article relevant to this discussion? Yeah.
So it talks about how there are trends in art that come and go and lifestyles, but when you follow the sunnah, it's not about a trend, it's just something that brings you home and helps you have a connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I liked how it talked about just the beauty of Islam compared to these strange art trends that come and go.
Yeah, anything else? Did you read it?
I read half of it, which is why I didn't really mind, because I remember last week you're like, that doesn't count. But from the beginning half and what I got, relating back to the stuff we talked about before, it's talking about how our environment is kind of changing and kind of attaching religion and our Islam to our environment isn't the strongest Islam because the environment is changing. And following the Sunnah allows the Islam to come from like within, and that is what's strongest.
Yeah, like the idea with a religion that claims to be a last testament to humanity, it necessitates then having elements of both continuity as well as change. And so reductive approaches to religion that don't connect text to context and creates this homogeneity that doesn't allow for there to be adaptability. There's certain things that just don't fluctuate in Islam, right? We're going to have five prayers. That's just the way it is. Do you know? There's things that don't have room to have adaptability as such. There's also things that are going to vary and differ from culture to culture and at times from time to time. Some of them are going to be necessary, right? Like, how would you know how religion applies to an era where everybody carries a computer in their pocket 60 years ago? Like, it wasn't a thing that existed at that time. Do you know what I mean? So certain things are going to just necessarily require us to understand how it is that things around us that are deemed to equate to normalcy kind of fluctuate. But the religion has elements of continuity and change underlined with this idea of what is actual beauty, right? And when we talked about this a few weeks ago, the whole premise is to not exert the implementation of Sharia in a vacuum, but it's meant to increase benefit and reduce detriment. And what the Sunnah calls you towards is this sense of beauty inwardly and outwardly, and not this superficial sense of beauty, right? That in the world we live in today, it's going to be rooted in supremacy, whiteness, anti-blackness. Most of the billboards that we see on the streets don't have people that look like us, you know? And a lot of what it is that is catered to creates now very particularly and purposefully psychological impacts that have us build up a sense of self-loathing or a sense of internalized racisms. The Sunnah doesn't call you to that, right? It calls you to be able to recognize what is inherently beautiful in others, as well as recognize what's inherently beautiful within yourself, and to feel empowered through that, that you can in fact have a relationship with God, that you're not meant to pursue perfection because that's a futile pursuit. The article also talks about a lot of other things that you should definitely read it, right? It's great. Now we went up like 800% from last time, but we started last time with one person, right? So now 7 or 8 people reading parts of it or the whole thing, like gradually everyone, inshallah, will read it. Any other takeaways from the article? Yeah. The article is called The Sunnah as Primordiality. It's by Sheikh Abdul Hakim Murad. Right? And so this hadith, you know, at a base is talking about following the Prophet, peace be upon him. And so we want to be able to kind of understand and reflect deeply, because a lot of us in this room are taught to do the Sunnah, but we're not taught necessarily like why. Do you know? Pray your Sunnah prayers before you're taught whose Sunnah you follow, and to be able to understand what is the fundamental objectives of some of these things. The implementation of the Sunnah shouldn't create ugliness, right? And not like ugliness, again, the way that we understand superficial ugliness. The Prophet alayhi salam was not harsh with people, right? This is hadith. Inna Allaha rafiqun wa yuhibbu rifq wa yu'ti 'ala rifqi ma la yu'ti 'ala al-unf, that indeed Allah is kind and he loves kindness and he gives for gentleness what he does not give for harshness, right? If you follow the Sunnah, like, you can't be harsh. Do you know? It can't create harshness. Do you see what I mean? That's not the purpose of following the sunnah. Does that, you see what I'm saying? Which isn't the same as like standing up for yourself, right? But understanding what's like the basis of these things, what are we hoping to see as outcomes of these practices? And then the outward and the inward implementation of these teachings are meant to have transformative effect that then render through the practitioner, not just the exertion of beauty, but so that you can see things that are actually beautiful as things that are beautiful. You're not drawn towards things that are ugly. Do you know? You're not in pursuit of things that are just temporary or rendering complacency, but you are able to see things from a deeper perspective and not just in terms of instantaneous gratifications. Do you see what I mean? Right? And that's what the Prophet ﷺ was able to do. So people that no one thought had anything good within them, he saw what was inherently good within them. Do you know, people that nobody thought had any purpose or benefit to society, the Prophet was able to see them differently. Do you see what I'm saying? Right? But that's the whole idea. Like, why when I look at you, do I see you in the ways that I do? Why when I look at myself, like, do I see myself in the ways that I see myself? You know, and a consequence of following the sunnah is that it can yield, when done properly, the capacity to actually see like beauty as real beauty, and to not see what is the facade of beauty as actual beauty, but to see that it's ugly. Do you know? And this is like du'as we make to see truth as truth and falsehood as falsehood, right? But thinking about that in the ways of like, what does this, and this is what this article talks about pretty much, right? Is that fair as an assessment? Yeah. Anything else that stuck out for the people who read the article? Yeah.
I'm halfway there, but one thing really, no, but it's still, it's very interesting for me when I'm reading it, because I did study the Renaissance art and from Baroque to 1800 and all that, and that's how the article started. And then when I gradually seen the contrast of how Islamic art and architecture influenced the Western culture, and I came to stuck in one quote when Malcolm says, blissful sensation of being drawn into a desert where nothing is real but feeling, and feeling became the substance of my life. I'm still trying to get the depth of that sensation that he felt when he was painting the black, simple black, similar to the Kaaba. Later, I guess more explanation to it, but I haven't gone through it. But that's definitely isn't some. How simplicity can be so beautiful.
Yeah, simplicity is beautiful. Do you know? I mean, how many of you feel peace in this room when you come in? And what is there? It's a green carpet. There's nothing on the walls, right? I don't even know what color these walls are, right? But there's not a lot going on in the room. You don't sometimes need that. People like being in this building because there's a lot of natural light that comes into it. A lot of people like sitting in this room because there's an unobstructed view of the park, you know, and you're feeling the benefits of just like the greenery, the flowers when they're in bloom, seeing also people, right? And people watching, not like in a creepy way, but in a place where you're able to ascertain meaning through some of these things. But sometimes it doesn't have to be like very loud and ornate. It's just very simple. And in the most simplest of things, there's the most depth of beauty. You know, I was in Denver last night and this morning, and if you've ever been to Denver before, just looking at the Rockies, the mountain range, you could see, like, even from a distance that the tops were covered with snow, and it's just a very different landscape, do you know? But this is what, you know, it's not simple in that sense, but it doesn't have the complexity sometimes that we seek out to kind of ascertain meaning from certain things. Sometimes, like, the pursuit of beauty is just a very easy process. Like, everyone has beauty to them. And when you can buy into that and the potential for people to have change and adaptability, the world just feels a lot different. Do you know? And then the exercises become that much more important. So why, like, is the Prophet saying this? It's not for his ego, but for our benefit. So what I have forbidden for you, like, avoid it. And what I've commanded you to do, do to the best of your ability. What's the gain? You start to, like, take meaning in ways that it's not impossible for people to harness, but they're so confined by these other variables that it just becomes something that escapes a lot of us. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? Right? And, you know, the implementation is outward and inward. So where we looked at last time, we were talking about now this second part of the hadith that said, do as much of it as you can. And we were talking about that that's not in terms of like the actual like obligations and prohibitions. You do to the best of your ability what you have the capacity to do. You know, and gave the example of like if you're praying in an airplane and you can't prostrate, then you do as much of it as you fundamentally can. So you stand where you're able to, and then you sit for the parts that you're not able to prostrate. But it's not saying you just don't pray at all, right? Does that make sense? Or we talked about the best of your capacities in relation to the things that you might do that are recommended, but certain instances might necessitate you foregoing something. You know, so if you're sick and you observe like a recommended fast, then your ability to fast is not there if you're sick. So don't fast and make yourself more sick. Like in some instances, you would choose to not fast, even if you're regular with it, because it's not within your capacity in that moment. Do you see what I mean? Before we get to the last part of this, this idea of capacity becomes something that's an important thing to also start to think out. In our tradition, the idea isn't that a believer puts themselves into a circumstance that's beyond their ability to handle. Do you know? And it doesn't mean that it's going to always be beyond my capacity. But in the moment, if I know that something is not within my grasp to do, where is there dignity and honor in still pushing forth in something that doesn't make sense for me where I'm at right now? Capacity in our tradition, right? Like here, the word that's being used is a derivative of like ability, istita'a. Am I able to do this? Do you know? Do I have the fundamental capability of doing something, right? I don't have the ability to build this computer. I don't know how to do that. That's the kind of thing that we're talking about when we say istita'at, that I have capacity. Do you see what I mean? So recognizing in this that capacity in and of itself also has elements of change to it. And where I'm at now becomes important for me to understand in relation to objectives that I want to be able to harness down the line. And for a lot of us, it's not that we don't identify goals for ourselves. Do you know? I want to read more Quran. I want to do more charity work. I want to volunteer more. I want to start my own nonprofit or a startup business. Like, it could be in any arena, whether it's worldly or otherworldly, whether it has to do with spirituality, faith, religion, family, relationships, friendships, whatever it is. But the notion is to be able to understand capacity with an air of vulnerability. A lot of us don't get to where we want to go, not because we don't define and identify an objective well, but it's hard for us to get to a place that we want to be at because we're not necessarily open to where we're at as a starting point. And if I'm in a place where I don't have that sense of self that says, this is where I'm at in this moment, it doesn't mean this is where I have to be forever. But if I don't have a recognition of where I fully am at right now, I'm not going to be able to get to places that I want to be, because my ending is defined, but my beginning isn't really as accurate as it could be. Does that make sense? Like, if I want to get from here to where this camera is right in front of me, it's a very easy trajectory to go from here to there. Do you know what I mean? If any one of you wanted to get there, you wouldn't walk in any of the same exact steps as anybody else. There might be some overlap, but all of you are in different beginning places. If you tried to get there through my steps, none of you would get to where you would go, because the steps are not indicative of where you're starting from. Does that make sense? If I wanted to get from here to the other wall, I know where I want to be. But if in my head I am not necessarily where I'm at, but I think I'm over there, I'm not going to be able to get from here to there, because the steps that I would take are different. It's going to move me over in that direction. Not because I don't know where I want to end, but I don't know where I'm actually beginning. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? And this question of capacity is important to understand. What is my capacity to hold emotions right now? What is my capacity to be in control of myself? What's my capacity when I'm around certain people, but not around other people? What's my capacity when I'm around those other people and not some people? How I know a little bit about my ability becomes now a mechanism for me to actually be able to say, am I doing it to the fullest extent of the capacity that I've been endowed with? How would you know what your ability actually is to be or do in certain circumstances or situations, other than if you were in those situations to begin with? Do you get what I mean? And then thereafter, how do I reach a concluding point on knowing what I can take from the experience fully that helps to identify where it is that I'd like to be? Say you came back from Umrah, from Hajj, Ramadan is done, and you've had these like deep spiritual experiences. You had demonstrated ability in the cities of Medina and Mecca. You had demonstrated ability throughout the nights of Ramadan, and then the maintenance of it thereafter shifts a little bit. But it came from me when I was in those places, didn't it? Like, I was the one that was praying in the late hours of the night in the Prophet's masjid. Allah accept. I was the one that was seeking out Laylatul Qadr in the last 10 nights of Ramadan, right? I know that I did that. I listened to the Quran every single night in Ramadan. I read it every day. I was giving in charity. I was volunteering. I was talking to different people when we were sitting in the masjids in Medina and in front of the Kaaba in Mecca. I was willing to like share things with people. So what shifts then? Do you see? Or on the other end of it, like I decide tomorrow, cold turkey, I'm going to try to wake up for tahajjud. And I got up tomorrow, and then the next day I got up, and then 3 days from now, I was falling asleep at the middle of my desk. I was going to try to fast, and I decided to fast outside of Ramadan just this week. You know, they keep talking about fasting. Maybe I should be fasting too. The first time I decided I was going to fast was in the middle of June and July in the summer, right? A lot of people make up their fasts like in December. They don't choose to make them up in the middle of the summer. And then it's difficult. It's hard. And I get exhausted. I get tired. My brain is hurting from caffeine withdrawal. Does that mean the immediate outcome of those experiences are telling me what my capacity is? When Ramadan is done and I came back from Umrah or Hajj and I could no longer every single night go on 2 hours of sleep, or I can no longer maintain like certain things I was doing in Mecca and Medina, does it mean that I have no capacity to do it? But that's where shaitan gets me. And the Prophet is also saying here is that if you're going to listen to somebody, listen to me. Right? Don't listen to your ego. Don't listen to the whispers of shaitan. Don't get into your head in such a way where you are identifying capacity through parts of yourself that you don't like about yourself. The Prophet ﷺ helped people to feel empowered, to feel as if they could have a relationship with God, that when they fell down, they knew how to get back up on their feet. When you try to implement something new in your life, new relationship, new job, new city, new town, new practice, new ritual, new habit, whatever else, how do you know what your actual capacity is, your ability? Does the question make sense? It's an important thing, right? A lot of us live every single day the same. And then when we try to implement change, it comes very seasonally, right? Many of us, like the rest of the world, buy gym memberships after New Year's. And then people stop going to the gym. Why? You have the ability to go. Do you know? You do. If you could come and break fast with us every night in Ramadan, why couldn't you come on other nights outside of Ramadan? How does one reflect on capacity? How does one even know what their abilities are? Do you see what I mean? It's an important thing to understand, right? Abu Bakr radiallahu an, he gave all of his wealth for the early Muslim community, bankrupting himself on different occasions, right? They said everything of his was for Allah and his messenger. There's companions that came, and they tried to give the Prophet a good amount of money. And the Prophet said, you need to keep this because you're not going to be able to handle what's going to happen. Do you know? How do you know what you actually have the ability to handle and you have the capacity to kind of deal with? Does the question make sense? If you can turn to the persons next to you just so we can start talking. How do I start to assess what my ability actually is? The potential of capacity that I have. We can talk about it for a few minutes, then we'll come back and discuss, and then we'll move forward and wrap up with this hadith for today. But go ahead. I guess What's up, brother? How you doing, man? You okay?
Yes, sir.
I feel like I don't see you without a suit so often.
When I'm in the suit, I'm coming from work.
Yeah. Yeah? Nice, man. I'm glad you got a day off. I said, I'm glad you got a day off. You usually don't have work on Mondays? Mondays and Sundays? Good. Yeah. Did you get some food? Grab some if you want. Okay, so how would one begin to determine this? Right, this is important. Why is this is an important question, right? Because especially in religious kind of understandings, the only time we talk about capacity is when life is like super tough, and then people throw out verses at us like "La yukallifullahu nafsan illa wus'aha," that Allah does not burden a soul beyond its ability to endure, right? But it's not in like a helpful, empowering way. It's like I'm miserable and I'm broken. And on top of that, it's like, well, God's not testing you beyond your ability. And while you're drowning, you're trying to figure out what the world means. Do you know? So we want to not wait till we're pushed down to then think of capacity. We want to be able to be honest about capacity. How do I know, like, what my ability is, capacity is? What did you discuss? Yeah.
One way to try and answer that question might be to think to yourself, like, if I were someone else, if this was a friend of mine and they had these situational factors and these resources available to them and this level of support around them, would they be able to get through this? And so, like, trying to remove yourself from yourself or to see yourself from an outside perspective can help you be kinder to yourself and more realistic about what's achievable.
Great. What else? Yeah.
So we discussed capacity as less of an ability to do and more of like a prioritization. So like, for example, during Ramadan or if you're in a place like Mecca or Medina, you understand that you're almost getting like a great deal in terms of like the spiritual benefits. So you might put aside some of the, you know, some of the things that you do on a regular basis because you realize that you're in a special place or in a special time. So all of a sudden you prioritize something, and then you might find yourself, whether it's coming from a place of of discipline, like really how you shared, or a place of emotion, you find yourself putting it above most of everything else. So so just to answer the question, I feel like capacity is more of a thing like what allows you to do something and maintain certain balance, whether the consistency, you know what I mean? Because I feel like if you're trying to do something and it throws you in a rut, and you start putting you in a bad mental place, then maybe that's not within your capacity. Maybe if you don't have the ability to prioritize that and maintain, you know, consistency. Or, you know, yeah.
Well, if any other thoughts, what else do we discuss? Yeah.
Something that we talked about was like our thing that was my thing was that if you keep practicing and checking in with yourself and reflecting every single day or every moment on like how this is impacting you, did you challenge yourself enough? But still giving yourself grace but not making excuses either. If you get into that practice of just constantly reflecting, then hopefully that'll help you keep adjusting for yourself. Very, very personal.
Yeah, right. And there's a thread here of reflection. Do you know whether you have like people that you can turn to and talk to, your own individual reflection, contemplation, but understanding the ability to do to the best of your ability means that it's not what sometimes we are limited in perceiving. It's what is actual and we don't always acknowledge fully. Do you know? Like all of us have the ability to put the chairs back at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? Some of us won't. Why? Do you know? You have the ability to do certain things. Like why at any juncture in your life did you stay up till late hours of the night like studying for what? Why did you pursue and make dua in conjunction with what? Why were you willing to like make promises to Allah in exchange for what? Right? What did you work like 12, 14 hours a day for? I'm not saying any of those things are wrong, but it shows you capacity. Do you know? If you could stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning studying something, then you could stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Doesn't it show you that? You have that as an ability. So why is that not used towards other things? Do you see what I mean? If I have the capacity that's demonstrated to me and I can reflect on it in terms of its utility, do you know? So I have the ability to actually do certain things. What's getting in the way for me doing that? Like I can actually get up to pray Fajr because I got up when I had no energy to take a test or take an exam. I got up and moved in all kinds of directions in pursuit of X, Y, or Z. What is it that's limiting me from using that capacity in these things? I have the capacity to be patient when the person who's talking to me inanely is somebody that I work for or somebody who holds authority over me. But when somebody that's talking to me comes from a lesser power dynamic, I don't exert any patience for them. Why? What happened to the capacity? Where did it go? Do you see? And the ability to understand it becomes important because it's not going to simply be enough to say, I just couldn't do it. It was too hard. The self-talk can create a prism that is not necessarily rooted in what is actual and real. And then the things that are really hard to struggle with, they don't necessarily get addressed. And growth, forget about becoming stagnant. We just stay stuck all the time. It's in the same place. There's no movement whatsoever because I'm not actually willing to recognize who it is that I am as a whole. The feeling doesn't identify it. You should be sad if somebody passes away. You should be sad if your pet is gone, someone stole something from you. Do you know what I mean? Those are normal feelings. That's not about capacity. The capacity to be able to learn how you endure in a state of loss can only come when you've actually lost something. And then thereafter, you reflect and say, hey, I got through it. Like I'm still existing in this mode. Do you see? And so when the Prophet's saying you do it to the best of your ability, it's not what you believe, right? Like somebody can read the article and somebody can read half of the article. but you all have the ability to fully read the article. Do you know, right? What am I telling myself gets in the way? And is it actually rooted in my capacity? Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Sometimes you're not able to taste the sweetness of something because the obstacles that are in the way are not outward, but they're inward. And the difficulty of something is not the metric of your ability to still deal with it or to take it on. And all the other stuff that's going to pull us back, you want to be able to connect to those elements that are going to be uplifting, that are going to encourage you to want to get to your potential best and to understand potential goodness, not in pursuit of what is just limited to worldly acquisitions of things, but through the prism of what stations and maqams exist with Allah and what He has defined to be as places of virtue and goodness. Do you know? So hadith that say food for one is enough for two and food for two is enough for four, you actually have capacity to give to others. But why don't I give as much as I can? What gets in the way? I have the ability to check in on people that I don't see for some time, people that I know are not doing well. Why am I not engaging in that? What is it that's defining for me my potential ability to actually perform in certain situations? Do you see what I mean? And then when I reflect, I can say, what's actually getting in the way? You know, when I went to Denver yesterday, I went for a wedding, I performed the wedding, and then wedding is done. I got back to my hotel. I didn't know what to do with myself. And maybe I should just go back to New York. And the red eye flight was booked, so I had to wait till 6 o'clock this morning. And I'm sleepy right now, and I know I'm very sleepy. And in the state of my sleepiness, I don't have to respond to it in terms of capacity, but it's not gonna make sense for me on these 2 days that I knew that the amount of time I would be physically sleeping was limited, that I would then pile on into my routine a bunch of other stuff, right? That doesn't demonstrate my ability within the moment that I'm in right now. Do you know? Why are you having important conversations at times that make no sense? Why are you talking about the most serious parts of your life when you're filled with anxiety and overridden with emotional angst? It doesn't mean you don't have ability. But if I can't do certain things because I've slept like 5 hours in the last 2.5 days, if you've just lived with heavy thoughts for the last however many days, weeks, months, why wouldn't it impact capacity? Do you see what I mean? Does this make sense? All of you is connected to the rest of you. Most of us are only understood in terms of our ability based off of arbitrary metrics of success that equate to acquisition of dollars. Allah does not care how much money you have. All He cares about is how you attained it and what you're going to spend it on. And that's truth. It doesn't make a difference how many pairs of stuff you own or how many people acknowledge you or know your name or whatever else. You can do whatever you want. You're just gonna have to explain why you did it and the ways that you did it. And knowing ability and capacity is going to still be fundamentally your prerogative to base decisions off of. You've lived with yourself every day of your life. You know your emotional states. You know what it is that sets you off. You know when you're at your strongest. You know when you're at your lowest. You know spaces that uplift you and spaces that exhaust you and break you down. How do the decisions have anything to do with an overall sense of self? And I know if we go around this room right now, every single one of us would say, man, there was a time I had a conversation that I just shouldn't have had it. I wasn't ready or able to have it. I was running on empty. I was exhausted, burnt out. It's not befitting for the believer to put themselves in a situation that's beyond their ability to handle. That doesn't mean that it's always, but then you get to the place where you can take it on. But when strength is exerted only in the acquisition of what is materialistic, when we have hadith that tell us we're going to be asked about things like our youth and how we spent it, right? We use a lot of like prime years of our existence in pursuit of things that are just temporary. It's not why Allah gave us like strength and energy for alone. But you pile in all of your ability in order to get that house, get that spouse, have those kids, get that job, get those degrees. But capacity and exertion of an increase or even a recognition of ability beyond what it is that's the approval of others or worldly gain, it just becomes non-existent. Why do you not have the ability to make dua at the end of your prayer? Why? What else is pulling you other than something that's distracting of the dunya? Why don't you have the ability to say hi to the person who's picking you up in the Uber or the driver of the bus or the person who's serving you food and exerting kindness to them? You do have it. Just because everybody else doesn't do it doesn't give you a reason as to why you're not doing what you have the ability to do. Do you get what I mean? Does that make sense? Why is this an important thing for us to understand? Like the entirety of this conversation around capacity and ability. Is it important? Why? Why is it important? Yeah.
I think we lack of compassion. That could be a barrier to not to see that ability to do so. Like, you know, as I'm listening to your this speech, I'm thinking about it. What holding me back not to take action into those things that I know I can do it. I feel like whether we lack of compassion, not to be able to wake up 5 in the morning and do morning prayer, or we are compassionate and we wake up before the alarm goes off and then do more prayer, or the other good deeds that we can do every day throughout the day or night in every moment that you have mentioned. I think compassion and followed by reflection kind of intertwine each other into this ability matter.
Yeah. The reasons as to why we might not exert our full abilities are going to be different from one another. Do you know? Some of us might be afraid. Some of us might be scared. Some of us might have grown up where everybody just told us what was wrong with us and not what was right with us. Right? People can be horrible. They just give us their trauma. They give us their hurt, their pain. It's not a self-deprecating reflection. That's not reflection. That's rumination. Right? You want to contemplate effectively. Why we want to think about this, one of the reasons, is what we're going to be asked about when we stand in front of Allah is not just what we did and did not do, but what we had the ability to do and still didn't do it. And I'd have to be able to own up to that, right? Like when I get a call to get on a plane to go to Morocco the morning after an earthquake, I go because like I can go, do you know? Somebody says, why do you do some of the things? Is because, well, like I have the ability to do it. And it might be nice and it might be like helpful or whatever else, but I'm going to have to explain to God why I didn't do it when I had the ability to. Do you see what I mean? And that's an important thing to understand in terms of accountability. Excuses give us a big pile of nothing. Do you know? And this hadith is giving us not just an insight on like, don't do what the Prophet said not to do and do what he said to do to the best of your capacity, but it's also teaching us, like, we have to be attuned to what we have capacity of being able to do. You have the ability when you walk down the hallway and you see somebody sitting alone that you just prayed with, that clearly nobody's engaging with whatsoever. And you can look at their face and they're just waiting for someone to acknowledge them. Why are you not doing it? What's getting in the way? And then you reflect on these types of hadith in different modes. Food for one is enough for two. Food for two is enough for four. Do you see what I mean? You can think about it in other modes, right? Like, I don't get up to pray Fajr. It's hard to get up to pray Fajr. I get up to pray Fajr, alhamdulillah. But just so we're on the same page, so no one comes back later and is like, the Imam of our masjid doesn't pray Fajr. But reflection can say, well, how is the night before spent in a way that indicated waking up at 4 a.m. was something that was important to me? But then asking, like, well, why is it not important in relation to some of these things? Like, I can stay up till 2 a.m. doing this, or I can forego eating, sitting at an office desk in pursuit of what? But in these other capacities, what else is there that's getting in the way? The other part that you could think about is that all of you has to be important to you. Your emotional self, your physical wellness, your mental wellness, and capacity to be able to take care of oneself in a whole sense, and not just limited to what it is that's going to stay behind in this world. There's a lot of people who achieved many great things while they lived in this world, and there's trillions of them. Nobody knows their names, man. Do you know? This question of ability, you have to ponder on with contemplative modes of understanding. I do have the actual ability, right? And then you can think about it in one last frame, and we'll move on in the hadith. Where is my other abilities that are not necessarily rendering benefit? Like, my words do have the capacity to hurt. As much as they have the ability to heal, and I can acknowledge the person no one's talking to, I do actually have capacity to make you feel bad. If I took one of you into my office and just yelled at you, do you know? Somebody would be like, what just happened? I said, never come back to this place ever again. I've met millions of people. You are the worst out of everybody. Would it make you feel good? No. I have to be conscious in the different roles that I have about my capacity to be irresponsible with my language. I chose to be married. I chose to have children. I didn't choose to be somebody's kid, but I'm somebody's kid. So I have to understand capacity in terms of what it is that impacts my babies, right? They're 8 and 11 now, but I still love them deeply. So that part of ability and capacity also is important to understand. And it goes in the same frame. Most of us don't have comfort in dealing with what are perceived non-strengths and shortcomings. So if I asked you to tell me all the things that you think are wrong with you, we probably wouldn't stop talking. If I asked you to tell me what are all the things that are beautiful about you, some of you might not know how to say anything. The combination of those two things are a strategy of shaitan, may Allah protect us from his whispers, to get us to then pursue what it is that numbs and desensitizes and gives the facade of contentment, but is really just complacency. So when you have this conversation of ability, think about it also in this way, that I have to be comfortable with the fact that from me can come goodness as much as can come the absence of goodness, and can also come ugliness and things that are evil. When you can acknowledge and accept that capacity and ability to hurt can come from you, it's going to heighten the ability to make sure healing comes from you, as well as limit, hopefully, the hurtful things that come. Do you see what I mean? And what contributes to it? What creates justifications or validations that keep me from doing things? All of us have the ability to not gossip, right? It's not something that should be just like innate the way you breathe. But when I can understand the capacity I have to harm as a result of me delving deep into this and put it now in a place where reflection comes in. Mahasiba is about inventorying. You're taking hisab of yourself. But that hisab of what you do in the course of the day, right and wrong, good and bad, what's futile, is not just a checkbox, but it's in the prism of divine judgment. How is what this day that I just lived going to look like when it plays itself out on a day of reckoning, a day of accountability? It's like, oh my God, like I could go home right now. I have this ability as a human and speak to my son in such a way that he will hate himself for the rest of his life. Isn't that true? I have that ability. Just as much as I have the ability to speak to him in such a way that he's going to be able to believe that he can take on any challenge the world throws at him. My capacity and how I utilize it will impact how he sees himself. And that's where it gives life in this kind of circular, continuous mode. Do you get what I'm saying? Okay, let's do this. You turn the person next to you. What are you taking away from this so far? What is it bringing up for you? And then we'll look at the last piece of the hadith on questions before Maghrib comes in a bit. But go ahead. What's coming up for people? Any thoughts, insights?
I didn't think about that.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.
Just say whatever
Now you can let go. Okay, so what are some of the things that are coming up for people? What are you taking away so far? What are we discussing? Yeah.
So I'm going to say, so what we talked about here was that, I guess one of the questions that's coming up is how closely associated should capacity be to comfort? And I guess a follow-up question, that's the first one. Second question is, using comfort to gauge capacity, is that also being complacent? And then there's a third thing, is like, as you define capacity, I feel like for me anyway, I tell myself, if I have the capacity to do it, and I do it, it has to be done quickly. You know what I mean? Like, I have to see the results quickly. And I feel like that makes it really intimidating. You know what I mean? So, but then if I don't push myself to, like, you know, to do as fast as I can, again, is that letting comfort regulate what I can do, which is that being complacency? So I feel like it just becomes a complicated conversation with myself. I'm not really sure. And it makes me uncomfortable. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's all. What's contributing to that, right? Where is there rest in the reflection? Where is there ease in the reflection? You know, where is there an understanding of something that is not just immediate or tomorrow, but everlasting and going into an eternal existence, so that these are things that we understand as a work in progress. And I don't know if I'm going to live beyond tonight, right? But fundamentally, I'm just trying my best to get through some of this stuff, do you know? And capacity and comfort, I would say, go hand in hand, but ethics are situational in our tradition, do you know? So you can imagine if any of you have ever come and sat in my office with me, or we've gotten on a phone or on a Zoom, or I've driven to some place where you are after like a 9 to 5 hour, would it be the same if I just sent you a text message, do you know? And I'm not saying like that to say something about myself. It just fundamentally wouldn't work the same way. Do you know? It's very different, like when you show up for someone, but the consequence of it is not just the benefit to that person, but but it comes back to you carrying out the act of kindness and compassion and mercy. You benefit more from interjecting beauty into the world than the person who receives the beauty. And there's certain things that are just categorically always going to be good to do. And wrestling with capacity in some of that becomes important, because saying yes to something means you're going to say no to something else. So everybody else might be doing something on a Thursday or Friday night, but you went to go visit the person that you know is like all by themselves and not doing so well. Do you know what I mean? And the egos that we have, right? Like, there's a lot of people who are adult, like physically adults, right? But they have children like as spirits and souls. You know, never weaned off of certain things. And there's just this idea of like, well, I want it, I must have it. And this antithetical to what the Sunnah calls to and what Islam calls to. So I should go read the article, The Sunnah's Primordiality. And I'll tell you a little bit about what this is all about and some of the other stuff. Like, read the Quran, actually read it and see what it says about some of these things, like hastiness and immediate gratification and whatever else. Do you know? It's not going to be convenient. When there's love, you do it even when it's not convenient. You do it when it's inconvenient. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, I'm sleepy. Do you know, if any one of you asked me to stay with you here to the middle of the night, I still would, because I love you and I'm not going to hold it over your head. And I'm comfortable in saying that because I know that it's true. And when I get home, if my kid is up and he's not doing well, I'm not going to be like, man, I'm sleepy. He's my son. It's my daughter. I love them. My wife needs something, right? It can give you a sense that the focal point is not on what is this that it's costing me. But in the midst of it, right, if none of those things happen, I'm going to go home and go to sleep because I know I'm running on empty right now. Doesn't mean I can't still perform, but I tap into another source of energy if it comes up right now when my physical, like, strength is running on empty. Does you get what I'm saying? Does that make sense? What else did we talk about? Yeah.
It takes a conscious effort to understand your capacity. And once you establish that consciousness, it then informs your decisions because you're able to tell what is it that is stopping you from doing something. So it's like it helps you gauge. And then once you understand your capacity and what decisions you can to help strengthen your capacity for certain things, that then alters how you live your life. And that's,
yeah, and mental strength is going to be really important in all of this. Building that can take time, especially in a world that is built off of keeping you distracted and vying for your attention in every which way of your wakeful moments in this world. Like, where can you walk where there's not every piece of like concrete in this city plastered with marketing and advertising? You got stuff stuck in your ears that's marketing to you. Everything in front of you that your eyes are engaging, there's marketing to you, right? When you sit next to people and they're wearing things with logos on it, there's marketing to you. Do you know what I mean? Everything is just marketing to you. Do you see what I'm saying? And it's purposeful because you're consuming. The command to lower your gaze is not just in this kind of simplistic understanding of gender relations, but you consume with your eyes too, do you know? And you're constantly just consuming and consuming, and people know how you work more than you know how you work. Allah gave you a book to teach you how you work, but all these other people know like your inward and outward because they want you to buy what they're selling to you, do you know? And if you can build mental strength that's attached to spiritual strength, emotional strength, physical strength. But how do you start to build mental strength so that I'm not just brought down by like heavy feelings that are hard enough to deal with, but the thoughts that then spiral downward as a result of those feelings that just suffocate me, right? And it's all taking place in arenas of cognition that I don't confront. And then it just keeps getting deeper and deeper. Do you see what I mean? Okay. Yeah.
I just wanted to say one more thing. As you're talking about this, and as we're talking about capacity, I feel like hindsight is 20/20. So like, and capacity may not always be well defined. So you may think you're only able to do something, and then later on you might miss a huge opportunity, and then realize you were able to do a lot more. But being able to forgive yourself, like, oh, for quote unquote, not living up to what you could have did, I feel like that's really important too, because as so many opportunities pass, I feel like the guilt, right, like Brother Ali was talking about, could grow and then maybe even become an angle, like something that drags you as opposed to, like, you know, helping you to look forward.
Yeah. And that's where, like, hadith that say, like, love for your brother what you love for yourself, means that it's okay to love things for yourself, right? Love yourself. That's embedded in the hadith. How can I love something for you that I love for me if there's not an element of love back towards me? Do you know? And it's hard to love fully outward when you don't like yourself so much, right? But why don't you like yourself? You actually have capacity to like yourself. Do you know? There might be things that you do that are terrible. Don't do those anymore. But you recognize your ability to actually hurt. You don't make justifications. Yes, I did that becomes important so that I own up that I won't do it anymore. Do you know? Not that I keep doing it by making an excuse as to why it was done. Like, sometimes it's just wrong. And that's just what I have to acknowledge so that it keeps me from doing it, right? Umar radiallahu anh, he literally, like, strikes his sister in the moments before he converts to Islam. He has to go through the grotesque act of hurting his sister, like physically, for him to realize what it is that he's turning into. It doesn't make it okay that, like, well, that became this catalyst. It's wrong. He's not supposed to do it. And there's a lot of instances throughout the remainder of Umar's life where he's constantly commenting on how everyone else knows more than he does, or how he becomes a champion to ensure that women's rights are not, like, oppressed or held down. Do you see what I mean? But so think about it. Just think about it in a productive way, in bits and pieces. It's not meant to add to overt scrutinization, but you build stillness into your life and you just think, like, what is my ability? What is my capacity? And I'm not better or worse. Some of us are morning people. Some of us are night people, right? That's great. We're just wired differently. I like to sleep. I love sleeping. And I'm getting to a point where I like to also eat a lot, you know? I walked in the office today and there was a salad on Amira's desk and she had left. And I was worried because it's a tuna salad that's going to sit there. It's going to stink up the office. So I was like, hey, there's a salad on Amira's desk. And Farhat, who just started working for us, she was like, you want a salad? And I was like, are you saying I'm fat, Farhat? I don't eat salad? What are you talking about? But understanding for yourself that this is a baseline. It's not what I do and I don't do, but also what I have the ability to do and I still didn't do it. Just because it's easier doesn't make it better. It's easier to be negative. It's harder to be positive. May Allah make us people of positivity. But you don't want to just give in saying that, well, it was too tough for me. No, man. Sometimes, like, it's not our faults, what's in our hearts, but we're still responsible for what it is that we're doing with what it is that we feel. And we hurt a lot of people in ways that we don't necessarily realize. You don't want to get to a place where that becomes an end concluding point. Does that make sense? And so spend some time just thinking, what capacity do I have? How do I build capacity? The increase in a virtue is the practice of the virtue itself. So if I know, like, I have zero tolerance, I'm highly irritable, I have no patience, then I bring some energy to me and I start to build up patience by just being patient. And I do it in increments. I'm working towards something. It's not an overnight thing that I go from, you know, one to another in a complete 180. That's where the kindness back to oneself is important. just because I'm at some place doesn't mean that's where I have to be. But if I want to get to where the destination is, I have to own up to where I'm actually beginning and starting. Do you know? Does it make sense? Okay. So in the last 15 minutes, let's go through the rest of the hadith. So the Prophet ﷺ says, "For indeed it was only the excessive questioning and their disagreeing with their prophets that destroyed the nations who were before you." So if you... if you go to Surah Ma'idah, which is the fifth chapter of the Quran, to its 101st verse. So people want to pull that up really quick. So 5101. Does anybody have it? You just read the English. You don't have to read the Arabic. It's tough. It's hard. Anyone have it in front of them? 5101. You do? Can you read it?
O believers, do not ask about any matter which, if made clear to you, may disturb you. But if you inquire about what is being revealed in the Quran, it will be made clear to you. Allah has forgiven what was done in the past, and Allah is all forgiving, most forgiving.
So this verse, like, was revealed in relation to the hadith that we talked about on the first day that we started talking about this hadith, when the Prophet ﷺ is talking about Hajj to his companions, and then one of them says, "Do we have to do it every year?" And the Prophet was silent in response to that. And then he says to the person that, "If I was to have said yes, then you would have had to have done it every year, and you wouldn't have been able to do this thing." And then there's a different kind of variance to what we've been reading in this ninth hadith. He says, like, to, you know, what I've commanded you to do, like, do to the best of your ability. What I've forbidden for you, avoid. But this verse is contextualizing that type of questioning. It doesn't mean all questions are a problem. If anything, questions are a very healthy part of one's spiritual growth, and they're necessary. If you get to a place where you stop asking questions and you only have answers, right? And this is a challenge. When you live in echo chambers or egocentricity is the focal point of one's engagement societally, you have a thought, an opinion, an idea on everything. Do you know? People, like, tell me, I mean, the number of people who say to me, like, "I don't really know what's going on in Palestine, but this is what I think." And it's like the entirety of the first part of your sentence negates and gives a reason as to why you shouldn't say what's happening out of your mouth in the second part. And you can replace the word Palestine with so many different things, right? "I don't know what's happening in the Congo. I don't know what's happening in Sudan. I don't know what's happening here. I don't really know about this, but I don't know about this, but," right? The basis of it is that you should be asking questions. We should have a thirst in being able to understand a little bit more deeply. If you go to the 16th chapter of the Quran, Surah An-Nahl, its 43rd verse, it says within this that... a verse that's quite often quoted, that you want to ask the people of knowledge if you don't know. You want to get acquainted with these verses, at least know where they are in the Quran, try to, like, learn them and reflect upon them. The people of knowledge here are not just people of, like, religious knowledge, but you want to ask people who know certain things based off of their expertise and their skill set, right? So don't pretend that you know certain things. When someone asks you, if you don't know, then tell them, "I don't know." But then you can help connect them to the people that do know, right? Someone comes to talk to me about things that are beyond my capacity. It's a daily experience in what we do here, right? There's thousands of people who consider this to be their community. And because many Muslims only understand inroads to their personal development through religious leadership, I get all kinds of questions that I have no qualifications of being able to answer, but referral systems are in place. So somebody says, hey, like, how do I do this or that? I don't know how to do a lot of stuff, man. I don't know how to do most things. And that's okay. I can be comfortable with that. But if you're going to ask questions, you want to make sure that you're asking the questions of the people that know. And if somebody asks you, sometimes it's not enough to just say, I don't know. You want to equip yourself with an understanding so that if it comes your way again, you're not meeting somebody with becoming an obstacle in their growth. I was 18 the first time I met somebody who was a survivor of domestic violence. A young woman who came into a college class that I was in, she had makeup caked all over her face because it was covering bruises. When I asked her about it, she said she fell downstairs, right? This is kind of a very common like response. You know, I fell down something. And I was like, we live in Manhattan. Like, where did you even fall down a staircase? Do you know? And then when she opened up and made herself vulnerable about her experiences, she was being forced into a marriage against her will. When she said no, her father responded by hitting her. And now she's turning to me, looking for support. I had no idea, like, what to do for this person. And other people who knew of her situation, nobody did a thing. In response to that, when people say, well, like, why do we do what we do in this community around domestic violence and shelters and whatever else? Because that person's narrative can't be in vain. And so someone comes and I don't know what to do. I have an option now of choosing to maintain ignorance or say, what do I do the next time somebody comes in this circumstance? Do you see what I mean? Somebody comes and they're struggling with something, or even if they're not struggling, you tend to get a lot of people asking you the same things, right? People reach out to us all the time about finding housing in New York City. You know, we had set up some stuff before COVID. They went defunct. Now we're looking to start it again. But it can't just continuously be like, we don't know. We don't know. We set up the systems. We make referrals. We gain the knowledge base so that we have some opportunity. And a lot of the things that you're going to learn is that there's so much out there more that any particular skill set you can hone in on is going to bring some opportunity of benefit to people societally, because people have such diverse needs, more so than we can imagine quite often. This verse is telling us, like, ask people, but ask the people who have the knowledge that you actually are looking for. If you go to Surah Baqarah from verse 67 to verse 71, these are verses that, if you read through them, Musa alayhi salam, the prophet Moses, is told to tell his people to slaughter a cow. A lot of us might be familiar with this narrative. And what they continue to do is respond back to the prophet Musa in these verses, narrowing the definition of what it is that he initially asked of them. So he starts with just a generic kind of animal, and then it trickles down more and more with specificity. What this hadith is telling us that ruined these nations is that the end result of what this is, right? And recall when Moses said to his people, indeed Allah commands you to slaughter a cow. They said, do you take us in ridicule? He said, I seek refuge in Allah from being among the ignorant. They said, call upon your Lord to make clear to us what it is. Musa alayhi salam said, Allah says, it is a cow which is neither old nor virgin, but median between that. So do what you are commanded. They said, call upon your Lord to show us what is her color. He said, he says it is a yellow cow, bright in color, pleasing to the observers. They said, call upon your Lord to make clear to us what it is. Indeed, all cows look alike to us. And indeed, we, if Allah wills, will be guided. He said, he says, it is a cow neither trained to plow the earth nor to irrigate the field, one free from fault with no spot upon her. They said, now you have come with the truth. So they slaughtered her, but they could hardly do it. Why was it difficult to do? Because they went from something that was this expansive to something that was this narrow, and their incessant questioning with an intentionality of just being difficult. Why do I have to do this thing? Why do I have to pray these prayers? Why do we have to eat this way? Why do I have to dress this way? Why do I have to be nice to people? Why do I have to apologize? Why do I have to say thank you? The difficulty is giving an indication of the self. Because they ask the questions again and again and again, it now becomes haram on them to do anything other than what the final narrow depiction is of that particular cow. Prior to, all they had to do was get a cow and slaughter it. And then they took something from here and brought it down this way. And it wasn't in pursuit of just understanding or awareness. They were just trying to be difficult. They wanted to make it harder for him to do his job. And as a result, they created more difficulty for themselves. You see what I mean? The connection point between all of these things is that I sometimes don't have to comprehend it for it to be true. And if I don't have a knowledge base of something, but I'm still conjecturing upon what it means to me or why it may or may not be Islam, well, what is the base of me being able to ask the question other than I think, I feel, I want? Do you see? And if I don't know what it is to begin with, then what part of me is telling me to challenge and push back on something? Does this make sense? So you want to know the nature of the questions and where there's comprehension and understanding and a desire to just know a little bit more versus understanding where we create difficulty through an intentionality of a questioning that's meant to just be purposefully argumentative, disagreeing, you know, create all kinds of kind of fissures. And these are problematic qualities. When you look at descriptions of what good character is in Islam, every understanding of good character tells us that someone with good character is not argumentative. They're not purposefully quarrelsome. Do you know? You just fight for the sake of fighting. At that point, it's you're learning a little bit more about yourself. Like, why do I always have to be right? It's not even the other person has to be wrong. I just have to be affirmatively the one that's always right. I can't ever be in a place where I can own up to the fact that I don't know something. It's liberating to be able to say that you don't know something. Do you know? It gives you a sense of freedom. Like, I don't know the answer to that. Go ask somebody else. I don't know it. Why would you want to know everything? So looking at these sets of verses all together in relation to this part of the hadith, but not to a place where it creates like a myopic perspective, you want to be able to ask questions, right? We've said in this halakha at different times, even the angels ask questions of Allah when he sends his Inni ja'ilun fil ardi khalifa, that I'm sending a khalifa representative on the earth. And they say, atajalu fiha man yufsidu fiha wa yasfiqu dima, that are you going to send one who creates like corruption and facade and sheds blood? But they're creatures of light, like strict obedience, and they're asking questions. You should ask questions. You should have a thirst for knowledge and wanting to grow in those regards. Do you see what I mean? It goes back to the question of capacity. When you drain your energy and capacity in pursuit of just what is dunyawi, it's not going to then leave room to pursue things that are going to bring contentment and balance to the heart from the questions that the heart wants to have answered. You know, who is God to me? When you start to know who Allah is, it brings you an inward state of contentment that other things won't necessarily bring. And then this type of questioning also, right? There's a hadith that says, "Min husn al-Islam al-mar'i tarakahu ma la ya'nihi," that from the beauty of one's Islam is to leave behind that which does not concern them. You don't need to ask people why they don't have babies. You don't need to ask people why they're not married yet. You don't need to be asking people questions that are not your business to be asking. It's going to destroy you the way it destroyed nations that came before you if you can't mind your business. The questions have to be rooted in what has beneficial intentionality. You know what it is, right? I am blessed to serve this community. So when I go to a lot of gatherings of this community, it's of gatherings that are like this. I don't go to like a lot of, you know, like family friend type gatherings that people grow up going to. But I know when I was younger and I would go to it, I'd always see people that were miserable because there's aunties that were always willing to go to someone and say, you know, your daughter is still not married yet, right? Or, you know, are you don't want to have a child, right? Min husn al-Islam al-mar'i tarakahu ma la ya'nihi. From the beauty of one's Islam is to leave behind that which does not concern them. That has nothing to do with you. You don't ask questions that are not your business to ask. Do you see what I'm saying? And it's not going to be helpful to your heart other than to inculcate like bad intentions, look down at people about things that aren't even things that they should be looked down upon. Imam Nawawi, whose 40 hadith collection we're reading right now, he wasn't married. Every Muslim throughout the Muslim world knows Imam Nawawi's name. So understanding the type and categorization of question here and who it is you take information from, how it is you're responding to questions that are asked of you, right? And don't give people information if you don't know the answers. Do you know there was an instance where there was a man who asked, he had a wound on his head, and he asked companions that at night he had a nocturnal emission and he had to do a ghusl. And the companions were asked, like, does he have to remove the bandage from his wound and let the water wash over it for his shower, his ghusl, or is it enough to just wipe over the bandage? And they said, you have to remove it fully. That's how they knew ghusl to be. And water got into the wound, it got infected, and then the man died as a result of it. They go back to the Prophet, and the Prophet says, why did you tell him to do this? It would have been sufficient for him to just wipe over the bandage. But they're answering questions that they're not qualified to answer. That's like the problem, do you know? And there's a lot of us who just say stuff as absolutes that are not absolutes or answer things that they don't, like that aren't even actually like what Islam says fully, right? You don't want to get in the mess of that because it's got deeper implications because you're claiming either then Allah said or Allah's messenger said something that they didn't fundamentally say. And that could be a big problem. Do you know? It's haram for you to marry someone from a different culture. Like, where does it say that? Do you know what I mean? Somebody once told me when I was younger that it was haram for me to eat baked ziti, right? And I was like, what do you mean? Do you know? And it was what he was trying to say was like, they don't eat that food in his culture, right? And he was saying, we don't eat this food in this collective we. I was like, hey man, I love pasta, do you know? But the language is there and it has implications. And then people get confused, you know? And you get a lot of people who become disgruntled with Islam because they're assuming Islam says something when in reality, that's not what it's necessarily about. Do you see? So in this last part of this hadith, like, yeah, you should be asking questions. Make sure when you're asking the right people. If somebody's asking you questions, like, make sure you know what you're talking about when you answer the question. And don't be asking questions that get in people's business. It's just not a good habit to be in. Somebody wants to open up about you, If you have a deep relationship, you can tell when someone genuinely is asking because they have concern versus they're putting you on the spot just to be able to elevate their own egos in some ways. Do you see what I mean? You don't want to do that to somebody. Do you know? It's just not going to be, it's not going to be good for yourself more than anybody. Okay, so let's take a pause here. Maghrib just came in. We'll meet again next Monday. Just the building's going to be closed this Thursday, if anybody's around. We'll be open for Jummah on Friday, only for Jummah. The building will be open from like 12 something to 4. We'll have lunch after also, so that people who are here for the long weekend will have, you know, a little bit of time to spend together. So try to come for that, inshallah, if you can. Okay, the people can put their chairs against the wall. And once we're done with Maghrib, anyone wants to grab some of the food that's left over also, we'll see everyone next week. Assalamu alaikum. Can one of you guys call the adhan for Maghrib?